The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, a lot of people come to meditation practice or a spiritual practice of some sort because there's a sense that the meditation practice or the spiritual practice might offer an avenue towards some ease or peace in their lives. That certainly was the case for me. So I just want to explore a little bit of one of the instructions the Buddha offered, one of the meditation instructions the Buddha offered, and how this helps this movement towards peace, towards some ease in our lives. The Buddha gave quite a few meditation instructions, and the main text that he offered for meditation instructions was in a sutta called The Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And in that, he offered a number of different ways to pay attention to our experience. That he said, these ways are helpful to look at our experience in these particular ways. Look at the experience in terms of the body, for example. You know, just noticing the bodily experience in the present moment. Not thinking about the body, but being with the experience of the body. He suggested paying attention to an aspect of our experience, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. A very simple part of our experience, out of which actually a lot of our movement away from peace arises. And he talked about exploring how our mind is responding to experience, how our minds typically move towards things or away from things, to look at qualities of greed, aversion, delusion in the mind, non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, to look at when concentration is present, when states of freedom are present. And this is the third foundation of mindfulness. And the fourth foundation of mindfulness is a little more complicated to describe. I look at it as being looking at our experience through some of the perspectives of the teachings that the Buddha offered. So almost a kind of a relational kind of exploration. How are aspects of our experience related to each other? What I'd like to talk about tonight is the second foundation of mindfulness, to explore this area of looking at pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experience. This was actually, it's a small part, it's actually a paragraph in this text, and yet it is defined as an entire foundation of mindfulness in and of itself. And in many ways, I think it's one of the explorations of our present moment experience that the Buddha emphasized pretty much more than any other, in terms of its value for us in understanding and recognizing how our minds struggle. So this experience of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experience, it's a natural part of the way our bodies and minds are put together. You know, we have contact with our senses. We see things, we hear things, we smell things. Our bodies are contacted by pressure and sense contact. And things happen in our mind. And with every single one of these sense contacts, one of the very first things that happens is that the mind registers it as either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So this is just part of the natural way our human bodies work. And yet it often is something it's a little bit below what we're consciously aware of. We may not consciously recognize that this sense impression that's hit us is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral because we are so quickly responding to it. We like things that are pleasant. We don't like things that are unpleasant. And we quickly move into thinking about how do I get these things that are pleasant? How do I get rid of these things that are unpleasant? And so the movement of our reactivity springs very quickly from this very basic experience. This very basic experience in our bodies and minds. The Buddha actually emphasized, I think one of the reasons he emphasized looking at this so strongly is because it is this place where our minds tend to move from just being with experience to kind of saying, oh, more of that, less of that, and it's what pulls us out of balance, moving towards pleasant, moving away from unpleasant. So the Buddha recommended looking at the actual bare experience of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and that this would help us to understand the cycle of reactivity in the first place, and in the second place, sometimes just recognizing where reactivity springs from, it begins to just insert a short circuit. It like short circuits that natural, very practiced, let's say, very practiced movement of reactivity to these simple experiences. So these movements from something pleasant hitting us, you know, we have something we like, some food we like, for instance, something we put in our mouths and we're eating, and the flavor of it, the taste of it is pleasant. And often what happens, before we even recognize that pleasant experience, we are reaching for the next bite. You know, we don't even get a moment to experience the pleasantness of it because we're already in our minds thinking about more, more, more. So this movement from pleasant to wanting to have more is actually rooted in a, we could say, a misunderstanding of how we can be happy, how happiness can be found. There's a kind of a very deep delusion that we share pretty much from the time we're born that having pleasant things and getting rid of unpleasant things, that activity of life, if we can accomplish that, if we can accomplish having the pleasant and getting rid of the unpleasant, that's a happy life. That's a kind of a very deep-seated belief that we have. And I think pretty much we all have this as human beings. And it's based in a kind of a misunderstanding that comes from a kind of a short-sighted perspective on living life. You know, as we move through life, you know, getting the pleasant things, getting rid of the unpleasant things, there's some kind of, you know, happiness that arises from that. And this is something the Buddha actually emphasized. He said, yes, there is happiness from this. And he recommended looking at just how much happiness it was. You know, look at just how long it lasts. That's what he said. Look at how long the gratification of pleasure extends. How long does it last? And what typically happens for us when we get something we like, we get rid of something we don't like, what typically happens there is that the moment of something we get that we like, it goes away because it doesn't last very long. When we really look at it, the pleasure of having doesn't really last very long. And so the next thing that we do is like, well, how can I get more of that pleasant? How can I get rid of this unpleasant? That's where the next happiness will come. And so this whole cycle around pleasant and having and, you know, holding on to and unpleasant and wanting to get rid of, we are on this kind of cycle of doing, to try to create our world, endlessly try to create an environment and a situation that feels good. And if we can't do that, which, you know, some good measure of the time is not possible to do, we usually take it very personally. We feel like we've failed. We feel like we've done something wrong. We feel like, why me? Why haven't I been able to accomplish this getting what I want and getting what I don't want endlessly? Why is that? And the Buddha basically says, it's just not possible. You know, it's going to happen. Pleasant experience arises and passes away. Unpleasant experience arises and passes away. It's the holding to, the trying to hold on to that and get rid of that, where a lot of our suffering arises, where our sense of unease, where our sense of dissatisfaction, that's a large part of where the lack of peace comes from, because we're trying so hard to accomplish this impossible task. And so the Buddha suggested looking at the place where this all springs from as a very useful tool for us in meditation. The instructions in the text are really simple. You know, as I was saying in the guided meditation, you know, the meditation instructions can be really simple. Breathe in and know that you're breathing in. You know, simple but not easy. And likewise with this, it can be described really simply, but it's not necessarily easy to do. But the first part of this text says something like, when feeling a pleasant feeling, one knows I'm feeling a pleasant feeling. When feeling an unpleasant feeling, one knows I'm feeling an unpleasant feeling. When feeling a neutral feeling, one knows I'm feeling a neutral feeling. So that's a pretty simple description. And yet, there's a couple of kind of things that make it not so easy. One is that we quickly move from pleasant to reactivity, and we're not so used to actually touching into the experience of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So it takes a little time to begin to get a sense of what this experience actually is. I mean, sometimes it's really obvious. I was on retreat in January, and somebody gave us some chocolate. You know, some chocolate was put out at the lunch, and I had this little square of dark chocolate that I had with a cup of coffee after lunch one day. And I put that chocolate in my mouth and let it melt in my mouth. And the pleasant experience there was like really obvious. Now, so sometimes it can be obvious. If we attune to it, if we open to it, you know, it can be really clear. But this experience of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral is happening millisecond by millisecond. It's happening with every single sense contact we have. There is just a split second of that contact, and in that contact, there is a feeling. So the pressure of your butt on the chair or cushion or bench, there's a feeling associated with that. Does it feel pleasant? Does it feel unpleasant? Does it feel neutral? How about the contact of your lips touching? There's a feeling there. That may be more neutral. For some of you, it may be pleasant. For some of it may be unpleasant. In your body now, is there an experience? It's the very first experience your body, your attention lands on. Whatever that is. Is that pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it neutral? How about the sensations of your hands? Now I'm going to give you one that may produce a feeling more obviously. Put your attention around your mouth and allow yourself to do a half smile. How does that feel? So every single experience has a feeling tone. Some of them are neutral, and the neutral is probably the hardest to touch into. And yet, a lot of what we react to is when things are pleasant and when they're unpleasant. So that's one reason that we don't really recognize the feeling tone, because we so quickly move away from it. It's also very subtle. It can be very subtle. Every single moment feeling tone isn't something that we touch into all the time. So it's helpful to begin to get familiar with feeling tone. The easiest place to do that is in the body. We just took a little bit of a tour of the body, but especially the skin, you know, the touch sense of the skin is finely attuned to pleasant, unpleasant, those two particularly. That pretty much, just if you have a soft sweater or something, just touching that with your hand, that might, for me, there's a slightly pleasant experience of that contact of the cloth. You're all probably familiar with unpleasant experience in sitting meditation. That's probably one of the obvious ways that this feeling tone manifests. You sit in meditation, we sit in stillness for any period of time, and physical discomfort arises. Pressure in the knee, tightness in the hip, itches, all kinds of sensations arise in the body which are experienced as unpleasant. Sometimes the simple recognition, often if you have, for instance, these bodily unpleasant experiences while meditating, you see how the mind reacts to that, right? It's not hard to see, for instance, a mind reacting to an itch. An itch is an unpleasant experience. It's a physically unpleasant experience. If you look at the sensations, when I've looked at an itch, it's like this buzzing, vibrating kind of zzz feeling. It's like a fast zzz in one little tiny place on the skin. And it's an unpleasant experience. Very quickly, the mind can't just be there with that unpleasant experience. It quickly moves to needing to do something about it. Like the mind will go nuts with an itch. And this leads to the next area. The physical, the first place it's easiest to touch into this, what the feeling tone is in experience of the body. And yet, one of the biggest places that the feeling tone impacts us is in the mind. So not only do our physical sense contacts have feeling tone, we look at things, certain things we might see are pleasant or unpleasant. We look at a rose, it may be pleasant, a decaying corpse probably experienced as unpleasant. Sound, likewise, music may be experienced as pleasant, leaf blower, unpleasant. So there's the physical aspect of experience and the feeling tone associated with that. And then everything that happens in our mind, too, has a feeling tone associated with it. So moods, emotions, liking, disliking, those have feeling tones associated with them. When we like things, it tends to be pleasant in the mind. When we don't like things, it tends to be unpleasant in the mind. And this explains a lot of how this whole reactive cycle works. Because, for instance, around the itch, there's the itch that happens. It's a physical sensation, a physical unpleasant sensation in the body. And the mind doesn't like it. There's a reaction in the mind. It dislikes that experience. sometimes intensely dislikes that experience. And in that dislike of that experience, that dislike is unpleasant. The aversion in the mind, the aversion to that itch is unpleasant. And it's like those two multiply each other. And the more averse you are, the more the itch seems to be a problem. The more the itch seems to be, it's like the itch is worse the more aversive we are. So the mental unpleasantness of the not liking is also, we're also reacting to that. You know, if you might find, if you try to explore paying attention to an itch, you know, it's like, okay, let me just see if I can pay attention. Oh, I don't like that itch. And then we react to that not liking. Well, this is a really stupid thing. Why am I sitting here not, it's just so easy to scratch an itch. And there's yet more unpleasantness that builds. So we react with not liking aversion to our mental states as well. You know, we have loneliness. We may be angry about the loneliness and then confused about the anger. So these reactivities are, they tend to be born off of this feeling tone. And so beginning to get curious about this feeling tone is really helpful. I'd like to explore, too, a little bit about the other side. I was just talking about, you know, how the cycle escalates with unpleasantness. It also, I'd like to explore, why is it that we so much like getting what we want? Why is it that we like having pleasant things and getting them? What cements that pattern into place? If we watch what happens, there's some experience, some pleasant experience happens, and we want it, we get it. You know, if we're successful in that moment, we accomplish getting that thing, you know, just something simple, a piece of chocolate or whatever. So we get that. And so we have the pleasantness of having that thing, which is pleasant. And we also have a kind of pleasantness which is not so obvious to us initially. And that is that there is a leaning to wanting to have something pleasant. And while we probably don't notice this initially, that leaning towards wanting to have that thing, ooh, that's nice, I want that. In that place of leaning towards that pleasant thing, typically we're in our minds constructing an image, constructing an idea of what it's going to be like to have it. That's a pleasant fantasy. So that's a pleasant experience in the mind that's contributing to our moving towards that pleasant experience. And what that projection essentially is doing is masking that this very leaning, the very leaning towards something, the very wanting itself, in that wanting, there's already a sense of lack, a sense that something's off, something's wrong, there's a hole that needs to be filled. Now, that's not a very big hole in the case of chocolate, probably. But in much of our lives, this is what motivates us, the wanting to have or the wanting to get rid of. So in this case, the wanting to have. That wanting, that experience of wanting is unpleasant. Wanting doesn't feel good. If you think about, just now, think about wanting to have something. You know, just imagine something that you want and think about the feeling of the wanting itself. You know, the wanting has a kind of feeling of agitation to it. It has a feeling of neediness to it. It's not a happy place to be. Wanting is not a happy place to be. And so what happens when we get what we want is we get the pleasure of having that thing, of the pleasantness of that thing, and then we also get the pleasantness of the disappearance of the wanting. I would like to propose to you, you don't have to believe this, but I'd like to propose to you that the disappearance of the wanting, the pleasantness of that, is really why we like having things. That's the larger measure of the satisfaction of the having, that the wanting goes away. And it's because that unpleasantness of the wanting has gone away. So it's really helpful to start to look at the distinction or where our reactivity is coming from. That if we're reacting to something, if we like something or don't like something, or we're having an emotional response to something, such as anger or frustration or irritation or greed or confusion, to see what is the mind reacting to there? Where is that reactivity coming from? To just begin to explore that. It's very interesting to see just how much of our reactivity is actually born out of our thoughts and our ideas, and not so much out of what's actually going on out there. So one way to begin to look at this is to kind of begin to explore what is the physical pleasant or unpleasant, and what is mental pleasant or unpleasant. So there's the, like with the itch, for example. You know, there's the, well, let's take something a little different. Let's take something, a sound. So, there's a sound outside, maybe an ongoing kind of sound. And you're, that's got some kind of feeling tone, maybe slightly unpleasant, let's say. It's slightly unpleasant sound. And then there is our thoughts about that sound. Such as maybe it's the leaf blower, which, you know, during the daytime here, there's often leaf blowers coming. So, you know, you're sitting in meditation and there's a sound outside and it's a leaf blower. And so there's the sound, which is the vibration in the ear. And then there's an idea about it. There's a thought about the sound. Maybe it's something like, you know, don't they know that there's a meditation happening in here? And why do they do that at this time of day? And so there's some thoughts that arise around thinking about that sound. When you can begin to recognize those thoughts create an environment of unpleasantness in the mind. They create a sense that they create a little aversion in the mind. So we've got that kind of multiplication thing happening, the aversion in the mind multiplying with the sense experience of the sound of the leaf blower, creating more intense, unpleasant experience. And when you can actually begin to recognize that largely here what's going on, when you can touch into the actual sound, it's like, okay, there's that sound, and here's the aversion. And the aversion is unpleasant, and it seems like the sound is unpleasant. But let's check in, you know, touch into the aversion and begin to distinguish the unpleasantness of what's in the mind from the unpleasantness or the feeling of what's in the sound. You begin to actually see that a lot of the unpleasantness is in the mind. That's what we're reacting to largely. Very frequently, what we react to is some mental idea or emotion that arises that's unpleasant or that's pleasant. And that's a lot of where our reactivity is born. Oh, for instance, you know, just a simple sound, like in the meditation hall, you know, somebody, you know, rustling through a bag, you know, it's actually a pretty neutral sound. And yet the mind creates an idea about it. And then one of the interesting things to look at here is how the mental reactivity then creates the sense that that sound is unpleasant. I've seen that happen so many times where I take something in and say, yep, that sound is unpleasant. And then I begin looking at what's happening in the mind and I say, well, there's an idea about that sound. At one point I was meditating in Burma and there was somebody who kept rustling in a plastic bag. And it was making this like popping and cracking sound in the meditation hall and pop, 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 pop. And I would listen to it and, you know, I had to listen to it a lot. They rustled in that bag a lot. And then at one point, I noticed that there was a kind of an overlay of a different kind of sound on top of it. And it sounded almost exactly like the rustling sound. But what it was somebody watering the plants outside. Very similar sound. And, you know, I could see the associations with those. Very different. Somebody rustling in a bag in the meditation hall, somebody taking care of the plants outside. Sounds were nearly identical. The mind creating the climate of one pleasant and one unpleasant. So this is really interesting to see. There is this feeling tone that happens with every moment, but a lot of that feeling tone is seen through a filter of how our mind is viewing it, with what ideas and concepts our mind views this experience. So this kind of exploration for me around, well, what actually is the mind reacting to, has been so interesting. One night, I tell this story a lot, some of you might have heard this one. One night I couldn't sleep, and I was in a stage of my practice where when I couldn't sleep at night, I would just get up and sit. So this was at home, and so it was like, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I couldn't sleep. So I got up and started sitting. And 20 minutes into the sitting, I started hearing a tapping sound in the wall. It seemed to be coming from the wall somewhere, just a very light tapping sound. Immediately the mind identified, recognized, oriented to that sound, and it's like unpleasant. You know, the body kind of just like, that's unpleasant. So I noticed that. It's like, okay, there's that unpleasant sound. Just being with that unpleasant sound. It would go away for a while, it would come back. And as it would come back, I would start to notice more about the unpleasantness. I began to recognize that the body braced when the sound happened. That bracing was an unpleasant experience. The kind of tensing and tightening in the body. That was unpleasant. It took me a while, actually, to see this, but, 15, 20 minutes or so of the sound coming and going. At some point when the sound came back, I recognized not only the bracing in the body, but fear. A subtle kind of fear arising in the mind. That was definitely unpleasant. You know, the fear was like, wow, yeah, that's unpleasant. Fear, that's unpleasant. And when having seen the fear at that point, I mean, I think what my mind did was create the image of a rat in the wall, you know, something along those lines. So fear around a rat, like, you know, getting into my house. So there it was, you know, so I saw that there was that fear in the mind. And then the next time the tapping sound came, I recognized that the sound was actually neutral because the mind had seen that the unpleasantness was around the fear and the body contraction and the idea of what the sound was created from. The sound itself was neutral. So this kind of exploration really begins to, just gives you such an education in how your mind reacts to things, how it moves away from peace. Now, it's not that seeing this will stop the reactivity initially. It doesn't stop it like that. But it really begins to give the mind an education and an understanding of what's up in there? You know, what's going on in our minds? When we start to see things like, oh, the mind is afraid because it thinks there's a rat in the wall, you know, that kind of thing is often just below the level of what we think of as, you know, our conscious awareness. You know, that kind of thing. Without that mindful attention, as I said, you know, it took me a while to actually see the fear that was associated with that tapping sound, because it was a very subtle fear. You know, it wasn't like a big, full-blown fear. It was a little, tiny, subtle fear. And so it took a while to actually recognize that the unpleasantness was all associated with a subtle chain of events in the mind. The image of this rat, the idea that there might be a rat, it might come in, creation of fear, tightening in the body. That happened so fast. But this ability to be present revealed that and gave me a measure of freedom around the unpleasantness that was associated with that whole experience. It sounds like a small thing, but it's actually a pretty potent practice for us to begin to recognize, where do we leap? Where is this springboard out of the present moment, out of just being here to want more, get rid of it, fix it, change it, gotta do, gotta have, gotta get rid of? Where does our mind leap? It's from this experience of pleasant, unpleasant. Check my time here. I'll just say a couple more things and then open it up to comments or questions. One really useful exploration around pleasant, unpleasant. If there's some kind of persistent reactivity happening, you know, if you're in a situation where you recognize, yeah, you know, you're angry or frustrated or upset, really interesting to begin to look at, what is it that's unpleasant in that environment? If there's some kind of aversion happening, there's something unpleasant happening that you may not have really recognized. So another example about this, I was on a retreat, a long retreat, and I recognized I had a very strong aversive tendency in walking meditation to the people who were walking nearby me. If somebody would come up and walk next to me, and it'd be immediately, I don't like that person, you know. They shouldn't be there, you know. So I began, after hearing about this teaching on pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, it's like, okay, this is a pattern. This is a common pattern in my mind. It reacts, it is aversive to people in walking meditation. What is it that I'm averse to? You know, what on earth am I averse to with somebody walking next to me? And so I began exploring, and the first thing I explored was my physical senses. And it was pretty clear, you know, there was no bodily contact, so it wasn't the physical sense. It wasn't the body. The person didn't smell bad, so it wasn't the smell. They didn't look unpleasant, so it wasn't sight. They weren't making noise, so it wasn't sound. It quickly became apparent that there was something happening in my mind that I was reacting to. Because objectively, from all outer stuff, there was nothing unpleasant happening. It was like, okay, there's got to be something going on in the mind. And it wasn't obvious. You know, I couldn't see right away. I couldn't see what it was that the mind was reacting to. And in this case, it was different. I looked at a number of these situations. In this case, the person walking back and forth, just kind of was with my experience. And the person was walking back and forth next to me. And at some point, after I realized, oh, there must be something going on in the mind, there must be some kind of thought there, you know, some thought that's creating some idea. And as I was walking back and forth, this thought sprang, you know, really obviously into my mind. He's weird. Okay, that's a thought. And still I didn't see the connection to the reactivity. It's kind of like I believed that thought. It was an objective truth. And then as I kept walking, I saw more information about why the mind thought this person was weird. And it was because it was the middle of winter. It was freezing cold. I was freezing cold. I was bundled up. And this person was in bare feet. And the mind said, it's freezing cold and this person's in bare feet. And I could see that was the justification for the mind thinking this person was weird. And at that point, the mind, you know, there was this recognition that the whole aversion to that person was born out of a thought in the mind. A thought that was just like, you know, silly. Completely silly. And when the mind saw that, you know, when that became clear, the whole pattern of aversion just vanished. And in the next moment, I was wishing that person well. Maybe happy. Boy, what a difference of experience between aversion and tightness and open-hearted well-wishing. Through this exploration of what is the reaction? You know, what is it that the mind finds unpleasant? And beginning to see the structure of how that was born. So mostly I've talked about looking at pleasant and unpleasant. It's probably the easiest. It's easiest to see pleasant and unpleasant. But it can also be very interesting to explore our relationship to neutral experience. There's a lot of neutral experience out there. We often just don't pay any attention to it. If we get a lot of neutral experience in our life, we tend to get bored. We tend to feel like something's wrong. We like the highs. We even prefer the lows to neutral often. You know, we feel like, you know, life is about having highs and lows. If we have an extended period of time of neutral, there can be reactivity to that as well. So looking at when things kind of become kind of neutral. And this begins to happen in meditation, actually. As we open to what's actually happening here, we begin to see there's a lot of neutral happening. I mean, you take in the sensation of the surface of your skin on your body. You know, it's kind of neutral. It's kind of just hovering at that edge of sensation. Now, there's a lot. We don't tend to notice the kind of vibratory, energetic field at the surface of the body. But there it is. It's there if you can, you know, just hang out for a while. And yet it's kind of, you know, it's kind of neutral. There's a lot of neutral experience out there. And the more we practice, actually, the more we open to that neutrality. And then we really start to see our reactivity to it. It's like, what am I doing wrong? You know, I'm not feeling that bliss that I want to be feeling. I'm not feeling all that pleasant experience that comes when I get concentrated. So looking at neutral, we begin to see that we react to that as well. And another thing that is interesting to explore around neutral is that when we're hanging out in neutral, if we're in a place where there's not much happening, if we can be aware of what our minds are doing in that place, very frequently, at least what I've seen in my mind, is when I'm in a place of neutrality, that's a prime place for habitual tendencies to kick off. It's like nothing much is happening. The mind will gravitate to its habitual patterns. So, for instance, I was in a... Well, one of my very strong habitual patterns was—it's not anymore a very strong pattern around a feeling of failure, a feeling of, I can't do this, I'm no good. So, a feeling of self-hatred, a lot of self-negativity, a strong pattern of self-negativity that I worked with for a number of years, and which I am largely—it's largely not there anymore. So, this is a great benefit of meditation practice. So But I got to watch it a lot. I mean, part of the exploration was seeing it happen over and over again, seeing the unpleasantness of it. And one of the things I saw at one point was in a place of neutral. You know, there was a place of just, you know, not much is happening, you know, just walking and seeing that, you know, the mind is pretty balanced and, you know, just, you know, not much is happening. So just recognizing that there was neutral happening. And then I saw the mind create this idea. You know, I just told you that, you know, the more we settle into meditation, the more neutral becomes clear. It's like, oh, this means my meditation is progressing. So my mind created that idea. This means my meditation is progressing. I'm in neutral. And, oh, maybe something good will happen. And when nothing good happened, by whatever measure I created in my mind went into its self-hatred pattern. You're no good. You're a failure. You can't do this. Out of neutral, the mind went into its habitual pattern. This happens a lot, I think, to us, that when we're in a place where not much is happening, our minds tend to gravitate to what they're used to doing. And so if you have habitual habits of mind gravitating to wanting or aversion or, you know, loneliness or fear or confusion or anxiety or depression or planning or whatever your favorite thing is, you may find that if there's a place of neutral, that that's where your mind goes. So if you are discovering a place of neutral, kind of, oh, be curious. You know, it's not a problem. It's not something wrong if it happens. It's like, this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to see how that pattern gets born. There's usually a trigger. Something in the mind will take us down that path. In my case, in the example of the walking, it was the idea something good might happen. Where is it? It didn't happen. I'm a failure. So, comments, questions? Yeah, and let's use the mic.
So can you talk about that? It sounds a little bit like the neutral is similar to non-gaining, you know, where, and the way I kind of heard that was staying in neutral is not okay. You either have to go to the negative or to the wanting.
We tend to do that. Yeah, we tend to do that. We tend to move to something we want or something we want to get rid of, that because it's a belief in our minds, actually, that neutral is not okay. You know, that it's a delusion. You know, it's the ideas around being acculturated to gaining, I think, you know, that makes it difficult to be in neutral. I think it's you know, there's delusion embedded in so much of our reactivity. Is there more a more question there?
No, I was thinking it's sort of that idea also of like entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great one to look at. You know, you don't have to not, you know, read a book or turn on the television or something, but be curious about when you do that. You know, is it because things seem kind of you know? It's like something, I want something to stimulate, you know. And then watch what it's like to actually watch the television, especially when the commercials are on. You know, see if there's anything more to say about neutral. You know, it's some of the most sublime mental states are actually neutral. Equanimity, that balance of mind that is not reactive, is a very neutral state of mind, and yet, when we begin to touch into that kind of neutrality, we also see the absence of reactivity as a great happiness. So it's a kind of paradox that that neutrality of equanimity brings a great happiness.
So that brings up something for me, which is when I examine things really closely, the good, bad, neutral starts to feel much more ambiguous. Like I'll have a sensation in my my foot will tingle because it's waking up from being asleep, and I'm like, oh, that feels good. No, that doesn't feel good. That's neutral. It just feels the way it feels, and
this exploration, this is exactly the place around, that tingling sensation. You know, if at first it's like it feels good, it's like, oh, the mind is, oh, the foot's waking up, and it may be the idea that's pleasant, and then, oh, wait, no, it's unpleasant. Is there some idea of, so looking at the whole complex of what is pleasant and unpleasant about it, and it does become more ambiguous in a way, because we start, it's like initially it's like it's unambiguous to us that an itch is unpleasant, or it's unambiguous to us that the sound of the leaf blower is unpleasant. And the more we begin to observe, you know, the more it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, actually that sound of the leaf blower, it's kind of just neutral. And it's because of the mental reactivity being diminished. The more the mental reactivity is diminished, the more we tap into the fact that much of our experience, the sensations of our experience, is actually neutral. Or much less amped up than we think it is. So yeah, that does begin to happen. So just be with it as it is. You don't have to, if you're doing this kind of exploration around pleasant or unpleasant, if it's not obvious, you're just, okay, well, maybe it's neutral, or maybe I'm not sure. so just explore it as it is. And as you say, yeah, the sensation is just the sensation. And maybe it is more neutral. So we need to stop. So thank you for your attention.